Well, good evening. Once more, we are gathered here tonight by God's blessing, by His providence, having given us the time to return during the midweek to assemble as His saints, to continue to encourage one another, and to, of course, learn from our God's holy word so we can make application of it in our lives. Again, to our friends who are with us tonight, thank you for being here. We're honored by your presence, and we hope that if you have any questions, you won't mind asking those questions. We would love to engage in a conversation, a biblical conversation with you. So please open your Bibles to the book of Proverbs. So what did we learn last week from the section that we were studying there in the book of Proverbs? We were seeing verses 17 and 18, correct? So what are some things that we learn from those passages?
The humble and the proud.
The humble and the proud. So what do the proud do? How are the proud, what trait of the pride is demonstrated in this section of Proverbs? They take kindly to being rebuked? No, right? They disdain it, right? They don't like correction. They do not like being told that they are in error. And therefore, their reaction is one of rejection. Whereas the humble, right, verse 17, is one who keeps instruction. It's one who is in the way of life. So verse 18, I don't know if I mentioned this last Wednesday, it shows us what happens when a scoffer or someone who is proud and does not like being told they are wrong, how they react, right? Passive aggressiveness can be applied to this passage. They won't say anything, or they'll speak between their teeth, right? I'm fine. Everything's good. And they have that tight smile on their face, but in their mind, chances are that if only you wait when you're wrong, and oh, I'm going to remember this day. Well, no. Notice that taints the heart. Notice that hatred, right, brings about strife, as we see there. Now, when we see this, the final section of chapter 10, we see here that in the next sections, in Proverbs, verses 19 through 22, once more we're going to see the value of wisdom. And we're going to see the consequences of folly. So let's read, if I can have someone read Proverbs 19 through 22 for us, please. Okay. What's interesting about verse 19? Now, keep in mind what we just read in verse 18. Whoever hides hatred has lying lips, and whoever spreads slander is a fool. But what makes verse 19 unique in light of verse 18? In the abundance of words, right? Verse 18 is talking about someone who keeps or restrains their lips. But yet in verse 19, now it's telling us that he who restrains his lips is wise. Well, here's where those skeptics and here's where those people that like to attack the Bible say, well, look, it's confusing. There's a contradiction there. In verse 18, it's telling me that I shouldn't keep anything within my heart, but then verse 19 is telling me that I should. So which one is it? Well, pay attention to the fact that in verse 18, it's not talking about restraining your lips. It's talking about hiding what? Hatred. There's a huge difference. To hide hatred, right, is resentment. It's holding a grudge. It's, again, as we've already said, having a passive-aggressive reaction, if you will. Even though I may not have said anything with my words, my body language and my face will many times give that away, won't it? And even if I'm able to mask it, because there's some people who are very good at masking their emotions, the reality is you cannot hide from God what is found in your heart. This is the premise of the entire point that Jesus makes in Matthew chapter 15, right? From the abundance of the heart speaks the man. In fact, Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23 made this point already, right? We are to guard our heart, meaning our mind, with all diligence. For from the abundance of our heart, right, comes forth the issues of life. So verse 19 is not talking about holding on to hatred. It's not talking about holding on to these negative feelings, and it's not talking about holding on to these resentments or these grudges that sometimes we can hold, because it will produce hatred. Verse 19, in fact, is talking about the same thing, but in a different way. You see, verse 18 is a person who is passive-aggressive. Verse 19a is someone who is just aggressive-aggressive, right? And the multitude of words is not lacking what? Sin. Here are two reactions that are being placed side by side by the inspired Solomon. Holding on to that grudge and that hatred is just as bad as just going off on somebody. Just taking out, yelling, right, going at them and telling them everything that you wish happens wrong to them. Sometimes, brethren, we say things that we don't mean, but it doesn't matter because we said them. You've heard the analogy before of the toothpaste, right? What happens once you take toothpaste off of its container? You cannot put it back in. I believe Sister Lucy one time showed me a song. I believe it's called Angry Words. They're in our songbooks, and she was actually teaching me how to sing it, but we were both reading, it was a few years ago, reading the words of it, and man, I don't know, why don't we sing that song more? Because that song is a warning as to what we should avoid to do, especially when we are in an emotional state. See, sometimes, brethren, when our anger takes over, our tongue becomes swollen and it has to spit out that venom somewhere. And when our emotions overtake us, we will say things that can be hurtful. Or to use the proper language of Matthew chapter 18, we will say things that are offensive. You know, sometimes we will speak things and we can use a very sweet tone, but the intention is to cut someone, is to hurt them, right? Because I'm angry and I'm trying to get back at you. Well, in the multitude of words, sin is not lacking. Notice how we fight this evil in verse 19b. But he who restrains his lips is wise. Again, it's not saying hold on to the grudge. No, to restrain your lips means measure your words. Think before you speak. If right now your mind is irrational, if right now your anxiety or your anger or whatever emotion is very high, then it's probably best for you to use silence to regather your thoughts. Don't speak. And if the person wants you to speak, tell them, listen, I'd rather say nothing than say something that's going to hurt you and hurt us as a relationship. I'm not trying to ignore you. I'm not trying to hurt you. That isn't my intention. Quite the opposite. I'm restraining my words because I don't want to hurt you. Sometimes you may not even be the one who's being the offender, but no matter what you say, it's still making the matter worse. In that moment, sometimes we have to understand and accept, okay, right now they're not listening and everything that I say is being used against me, so I'm just going to stay quiet and wait. So things calm down, and then we'll pick it up once we're both reasonable and we're listening to each other. Notice, when we do 19b, the value of wisdom, we resolve problems. we are able to keep and maintain the peace. In fact, sometimes we're able to make peace because we learn how to measure our words. We learn how to restrain the impact of our words. We control ourselves to the best of our ability, knowing that the intent of having this speech or having this conversation isn't to destroy, it's to build. It's to brace or to protect. Sometimes, as I mentioned last week, fights are going to be inevitable, right? We're human beings. But, to quote my wife again, to learn how to fight is to learn how to restrain our lips. We have to have this confrontation. We have to talk about this disagreement. But it doesn't mean that we have to come out with our guns blazing, right? We don't, you know, Laura just did the Irish stance, right? We don't have to do the bare-knuckle boxing. Hey, put the paws down. We're not enemies. We're brethren. You know, to the married couples in here, something that I learned from my mom and my dad, and even with us as their children, when my brother and I obeyed the gospel, when there were disagreements and they had to be discussed, my parents would always start off by saying, right now in this moment, you're not my son. Right now in this moment, you are my brother and I am your brother, or if it was my mom, I am your sister. And therefore, because we're going to speak as two Christians who are co-heirs with Christ, we're going to start by setting the tone by putting this conversation in the hands of God. And as we continue the conversation, let us remember that we are both serving the same God. We have to try to always remember that. We have to try our best to keep that always in mind when we're dealing with one another, because sometimes just because the word family is found, we tend to forget that we're Christians, right? We tend to forget that we're Christians, and that trust, that confidence that we build between another somehow becomes a license to bring out the knives and cut one another. That never should be the case. So, again, the value of wisdom is choose your words carefully. You don't have to say a lot in order to say what you need to say. You can make your point without having to fill an entire page of words. Because in the multitude of words, sin is not lacking. We go to verse 20. The tongue of the righteous is choice silver. The heart of the wicked is worth little. The heart of the righteous is choice silver. Why choice silver? Why not just silver? What's the difference? In fact, why not gold? Why is it that Proverbs is using choice silver? It's refined. Very good. What else? It's more durable. Not only is it more durable, it's more accessible. Gold is not as easily accessible as silver, is it? But choice silver, it's a lot more difficult to obtain, but not as difficult as gold. See, we can all speak. We can all be politicians. We can all say the right things when we really want to, can't we? But the righteous is always going to speak in truth, and he's always going to know how to do it in a way that it heals. He not only knows how to measure his words, he knows the timing of when to use them. It's not the same thing to be able to say the right things just to get myself out of a jam versus speaking truth because it is what should be always spoken. See, choice silver refers to, of course, refined silver. It refers to something that was valued a little bit more because not only was it refined, but it was a little bit more rare to hold. There were degrees of silver, right? There are degrees and types of carats, if you will. For example, a 10-carat gold ring is not the same as a 14-carat ring, right? One is more valuable than the other. But what Solomon is teaching us here is this is doable. All men can learn to speak wisely. This is not an unachievable goal. This is not something that's outside of our distance. We just have to be willing to train our tongue. We have to be willing to practice prudence, wisdom, and restraint. So what makes that silver righteous, as Sister Renee has mentioned, is that it's refined. How do you refine silver? You have to put it through the fire, right? You have to melt it. You have to put it in the furnace in order to melt it so that you can remove what? The dross, right? That's how you purge it. That's how you purify it. What do we have to do with our speech? We have to put it through the fire, right? We have to learn to use honest speech. But just because I speak honestly doesn't give me the right to use an impact that can be hurtful or disrespectful. I can be direct and honest without hurting someone. But as we've said before, sometimes even if you speak in the most of gentle tones, some truths are never going to be easy to cushion the blow. For example, to our friends who know that they need to be baptized but choose not to, I can tell you the best way that I can, that if you die in that condition, you will not be saved. And that is not what we want for you. But it doesn't change the fact that that truth is hard to swallow. If we are in sin, for those of us who have put on Christ, and we are in sin or we've offended our brother, or our brother has offended us and we're holding that grudge against them, if we die in that condition, our salvation is at peril. It's not an easy truth to say, and I'm not saying it to point fingers at anyone, because I don't know of anyone's cases here except just for mine, and well, we're not about to talk about mine, right? Because I have to be responsible for my own actions. But how hypocritical would it be of me if I'm telling you this and I'm not practicing it myself? See the point? Some truths, no matter how lovingly we say them, they're going to hurt. But because we know that they're going to hurt, those are usually the ones that we should try to speak the most softly and the most gently possible. Try to lessen the sting as best as we can, even though it's still going to sting. You know, when they draw blood at the doctor, they still got to use a needle, right? I'm curious as to how AI is going to figure a digital way of pulling out blood without using a needle, right? I don't think it'll ever happen, but we know that's the direction the world's trying to go. Everything is digital now. Some things can never be digital. Our health is one of them, right? So when we see this, again, this is why the tongue of the righteous is choice silver. What makes it choice silver is not the fact that he speaks honestly. It's not the fact that he's upright and he's blameless. It's the fact that he knows how to use his speech in a wise manner, where he's speaking truth without tainting it, meaning without restraining it because you don't want to tell all of the truth. That's not speaking truth, and that's not being righteous. It means that he knows how to speak the truth, but he does it in a way where the person who needs to hear it is actually going to listen. They're going to recognize the refined silver that is being given to them. They're going to recognize that what is being shared with them and what is being done with them is going to be valuable to them. The heart of the wicked is worth little. Who in here would trust all of their life savings to a known liar? Anybody in here would be willing to give Bernie Madoff their hard-earned money? What about the Enron guy? You know, I remember in Houston, man, everybody was talking about him. Why wouldn't we give them our money? Because they're known thieves, right? And yet, Jesus gave Judas the money bag. Something to ponder about, right? The point of the proverb, though, is that when we know that we're not going to get anything in return, when we know that that person doesn't think before they speak, there's someone that they never speak with wisdom, You're not going to seek them out for counsel. You're going to avoid them. In fact, if you're speaking with someone that you deem as wise and as righteous, and that person whom you know is not prudent and is a gossiper, the moment that person appears and they ask, "What are you guys talking about?" you switch the subject. Because they have very little that they can contribute to the solution you're searching for, right? Notice, the heart of the wicked is worth little. Person who is wicked is always trying to call attention to themselves. They're boisterous. Remember foolish woman, the adulterous woman in the first 9 chapters of the book? She was boisterous. She was loud. She wanted everybody to know where she was at. She was always cackling. She was always saying all these sensual things. She always wanted to be the center of the attention. But the wise man, or the wise woman, as seen in the first 9 chapters, oh, she spoke. But when she spoke, she did it with wisdom. She wasn't doing it about herself. She was trying to actually contribute to those who were willing to listen to her. Jesus speaks about the Pharisees who made long prayers in the streets, remember? What was the purpose of doing those long prayers? Why were they doing that? Christ tells us that. He says they lead these long prayers in the streets so that what? So that all men could see them. And then Jesus says, and verily I say unto you, they have received their reward. When you do your good deeds or when you do your alms, do not do like the Gentiles do, right? They do the good alms and they want everybody. You know, I always laugh when I see on TV, you know, these artists doing these good deeds, going to the hospitals, doing the serving the soup kitchens. And I always ask myself the same question. If the camera weren't there, would they still do that? Is it really, some of them maybe are being sincere, right? We don't know. But the fact that it is being advertised, right? The fact that it's being advertised and not even for the place where we can go and help too. Have you paid attention to that? The advertisement is always for the artist and the work that they're doing. They don't even tell us the place where they go. They're doing their charitable deeds so that they can be seen by everyone. But what about those who do these charitable deeds and we don't even know that they're doing it? That is someone who is valuable. That is someone who is choice silver. Someone who does it not because they want to be seen by men, but they do it because it's the right thing to do. And they understand that as good stewards of God's blessings, one way to honor God is by giving the blessing as it was received by us. Brother Domingo, you had raised your hand?
I was just thinking of the righteous and the choice silver. You know, it's the wisdom of the righteous is, you know, it's because it's been tested. You know, you've gone through the fire, so to speak. You know, you've gone through some situations. And just like choice silver,
very good. And it goes back to what he starts there, right? It's he who keeps instruction. He's learned probably from, okay, I know what putting my foot in my mouth tastes like, and I don't like that taste, so I'm going to be careful next time not to make the same mistake again, right? That's a very good observation, Brother Domingo. Thank you. The choice silver is tested, right? It goes through that process of purification. And sometimes we make mistakes when we speak, right? Sometimes we'll say the wrong thing to the wrong person. You know, long ago I learned from a friend of mine, you never ask a lady if she's pregnant. Yesterday, I was at dinner with Tyler, and Tyler leans in and asks me, "Is she pregnant?" And I'm like, "You don't ask that, boy." And he's like, "Well, I'm not asking her." "You don't ask that." I told him, "You're going to learn very soon. Women have hyper hearing." I was like, "If she offers the information, then we can talk. But if you want to find out why you don't ask, then go ahead and ask." You know, sometimes we have to be careful what we assume or what questions we ask, right? Because we may not want to offend, and we can still be offensive, right? So that's a very great point, Brother Mingo, right? We learn also from the times where our tongue has gotten us into hot water. But again, verse 21, the lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for lack of wisdom. Now, this passage is increasingly important, especially in the current world that we're living in. More and more difficult is it becoming to find wise counselors, isn't it? The lips of the righteous feed many. Blessed is the congregation that has more than one wise person that can give godly advice. You know, what a blessing when you know, if brother so-and-so is already tied up, you have another brother you can go to, and if he's already tied up, well, you have another sister, and you have another sister, you can go to anyone and still find biblical sound advice. What a sorrow when there's only one, or even worse, when there are none. You know, in the book of Ezekiel, we read this, that this was the case, wasn't it? God told Ezekiel to let the children of Israel know, or the children of the house of Judah to know, that the times were going to come where they were going to seek for a vision, they were going to seek for a prophet, an elder, or a wise man among them, and they would find none. Notice the second part of verse 21. But fools die for lack of wisdom. It's one thing to not find someone to give you advice, but it's a whole other matter when you choose not to look for it. When you would rather swallow your pride, when you would rather not admit that you're wrong, or worse, you know that you're wrong and that's why you won't go ask for advice, because you don't want to hear that you're wrong. Some time ago, I was hearing on the radio this show where people tell very interesting stories about their lives. This man had gone up there to talk about his story. And the story began by his mother giving him advice as to his bad selection of friends that he surrounded himself with. And his mother would always tell him, son, you need to learn from the bad choices you've surrounded yourself with. So this man, in all his wisdom, decided he was no longer going to tell his mom the friends that he had. And so by not telling her, he thought that that way he was protecting her because he wouldn't worry her. This was what his wisdom was dictating. One day at the bar, this man is approached by another man. And as always, they hit it off. But his mother's advice kept coming into his mind, and he couldn't shake off this feeling that this is one of those times he should listen to his mom. But as always, he was about to go with this man to his apartment so that they can continue doing whatever it was doing. But then all of a sudden, something came up that stopped him from going. So he wasn't able to go. A day later, he sees on the news that the man who was inviting him over to his apartment was Jeffrey Dahmer. What saved him wasn't his mom's advice, because he was going to go. Had not that mishap that stopped him from going happened, well, he would have been the next missing body on the news, wouldn't it? Fools die for lack of wisdom. You know, this morning I was telling my mechanic, I was thinking about my uncle, because my uncle, I would always tell him, Theo, that cough, when are you going to go to the doctor? No, I'm good. Theo, you've been smoking since you were 12, you're not good. That cough is worrisome. It's getting worse. You know why I don't go to the doctor? Because the day I go to the doctor, they're going to tell me I'm sick and then I'm going to die. The day he went to the hospital, it's almost as if he was a prophet. And I remember telling him, because I stayed with him that entire week, that last week of his life, I had the honor to be at my uncle's side. And I told him, I told you, I'm like, no. If you would have come sooner, you would have proven yourself that you were wrong. Fools die for a lack of wisdom. It's not that we're not able to obtain wisdom, it's that we refuse to search for it. Brethren, we have to learn to be humble and to accept when we need help. We cannot be afraid. Yes, it's sometimes shameful. And I said this on Sunday morning, remember? When you come forward to ask for prayers, it's not easy. It's not supposed to be easy, especially if you know that what you've done has offended God. It's supposed to be embarrassing. That embarrassment, that shame, is meant to be a deterrent because you don't want to do it again. But if you never allow yourself to go through it, guess what? Your conscience is going to keep thinking that you're doing what's right. The best way to stop myself from always going forward to ask for prayers is by learning from my stumbles and not doing it again. Reminding myself, I don't want to go through that embarrassment again. I don't want to feel that shame again. I don't want to feel that sorrow that I dishonored and I displeased God again. But if because I don't want to feel that discomfort, I'd rather not go up front and not tell anybody that I need help, that's pride. That's arrogance. And the fool will die for lack of wisdom. You see, the righteous are humble, right? The lips of the righteous feed many. Those sisters who came forward this past Sunday, the brethren who have done it before, all of those who have always come forward, pay attention to the lesson that they've been teaching all of us. The encouragement that they've been giving all of us. Hey, it's not as painful as I think. You know, the crowd of people that were lining up to encourage, to hug, to rejoice together, because we all had that passage in mind of the feast in heaven that was taking place for those souls that were penitent. Doesn't just happen when there's a baptism, folks. It also happens when someone comes back to the fold. It teaches us, it feeds many, because it encourages me that if I need the prayers, if I am in sin and I'm not winning that battle on my own, I know that I can go forward and ask for help because I've seen others do it and they were not destroyed for it. They were built up because of it. Yes. Mm-hmm. And go with me to 1 Timothy chapter 5. 1 Timothy chapter 5, the Apostle Paul gives some very important lessons. And we're going to read verses 19 through 22. The Bible reads, "Do not receive an accusation against an elder except from two or three witnesses. Those who are sinning, rebuke in the presence of all, that the rest also may fear." "I charge you before God and the Lord Jesus Christ and the elect angels that you observe these things without prejudice, doing nothing with partiality. Do not lay hands on anyone hastily, nor share in other people's sins. Keep yourself pure." Now it's interesting, this has to do, all this section right here from 19 to 23, it has to do with how Timothy as the evangelist there at Ephesus was to work with the eldership there. And the first thing that Timothy has to do, as we see in there in verse 19, is he has to protect them. Do not receive an accusation against elders unless two or three witnesses. Verse 20 speaks about if there are two or three witnesses, if this has been confirmed, because remember, in the mouth of two or three witnesses, all words are confirmed, right? If more than two people are all saying the same thing, then you have to deal with it. But what I want us to bring is, pay attention to verse 20. He is not to do it in private. Rebuke in the presence of all, that the rest also may fear. This is dealing with the eldership. An elder who refuses to repent, an elder who's no longer being blameless. An elder who is disqualifying himself and is disrespecting the office that God has placed upon him. Notice that it has to be public. Because two or three witnesses have already came and said the same thing. It's a public nature, isn't it? But pay attention to the reason why. That the rest may learn also to fear. Not be afraid. Not be intimidated. No. That the rest may also learn to respect the office that they've been assigned. In the military, if one soldier disrespects the uniform in front of the rest of their fellow soldiers, what is their commanding officer supposed to do? Take them into the room? Sister Tasha, you mind enlightening us? Because I know this is a passion subject for you. Right there. Why would you correct them right there? What you're doing to that uniform, you're doing to your fellow airmen. You're doing to your flag. You're doing to your commander officer. You're doing to your country. You may not respect it, but you will respect me. You're not trying to show off. You're showing that person that their precedent that they're setting can corrupt others to believe it's okay to disrespect the office that we've been entrusted with. Brethren, if we're hearing one of our fellow brothers or sisters gossiping, if we're hearing them speak foolishly, if we're hearing them spread slander that is foolish, as we just read, we need to, as Titus chapter 1, verse 10 says, close their mouths. We need to. If someone is living in sin and they're exhibiting it to all and they're showing off because they're in sin, we have to shut that down. Because the lips of the righteous feed many. To allow sin in the camp, brethren, is to allow the plague of the spiritual plague to enter that aims to kill the crops that belong to God. Our time is up. Let's go ahead and have a word of prayer, and we will end our study here for tonight. If you will, please bow with me.